Thank you, Michael. Thank you, everybody, for coming here this afternoon. So I'm going to switch direction a little bit, and the problem I'm talking about is still going to be, global scale, just like Dr. Fendorf was talking about, with inorganic contaminants. And this class of compounds called the chemicals of emerging concern, they're organic, so I'm focusing on organic. So I only have 25 minutes here, and I can stay here for probably a whole afternoon talking about it, and I'm sure that's not allowed. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to focus on source and occurrence and from a global perspective of emerging contaminants, and that will lead to impacts and challenges. Okay, so the chemicals of emerging concerns, the great name is CECs, which is very often can be confused with cation exchange capacity, but it has nothing to do with, inorganic contaminants at all. And this is totally non-naturally occurring compounds, and we add those things on top of our head. It's associated with our daily life, and also associated with animal productions, and the compounds we use for therapeutic purpose or subtherapeutic purpose, which, the intention is truly just want the chickens to be a little bit 1 pound, heavier than it really is, so that we can sell a good price. But as you can see that this is a long list, the list can go on forever, and there's a lot of things we're talking about. Let me just use prescription drug as example. So if those of you that have stock, in the prescription drug, and you're, making good decision from that perspective, and you can see that next 5 years, there's a 6.5% increase for global total prescription drug sales. And it's going to increase, because we're getting richer and sicker and just sky falling, right? So now, if you look at the pie chart, the distribution of global prescription drug sales, and one major problem is in the United States. We, 3% of the world population use 40% of prescription drug, right? I'm not talking about other things. Here, I'm just looking at prescription drug as an example. But doesn't mean that people from other part of the world are not guilty. As you can see, then when there's people, there's need for drug or other things. Okay, so it is truly a global scale. Now, every so often, CDC does a survey and they go out on the street and they say, hey, did you use drug, prescription drug last 30 days? You say, yeah, well, how many? So anyway, then they put this survey data. So basically, they look at the people that take at least one prescription drug in the past 30 days, and or three, or more than five. And then they look at the percentage, and they break it down, the male and female. So as you can see, past 30 days, about half of U.S. population, this is a stats for U.S., half of U.S. population have taken at least one prescription drug, and some of us even taking more. And for some reason, female tend to get sicker maybe than male, so the percentage is slightly higher. Now, when you get older and you rely on drugs, to cure your problem. So anyway, and along with this report, here's a number from CDC. During the past year, there were 2.8 billion drug-related, drug order or provided for the physician office visit. So that accounts to about 74% of the trip of to the doctor's office involves some kind of drug therapy. So now, collectively as a nation in the U.S., again, we are in pain, and we have tend to have high lipid content, and we're not too happy. So this Homer Simpson represents us all. So anyway, and as you can see, this number here, top 10 most prescribed drugs in the U.S., that's one-third of the population, right, taking some kind of drug within a month, okay? So anyway, and it's just, you know, prescription drug, it's massive, it's everywhere. And where does it go? If you follow the path, it's very simple, no-brainer, right? It goes out of the other end of us, okay? And it goes into manure or wastewater. And then follow the path, it goes into wastewater treatment plants or septic system or some kind of manure holding facility. Now, I did a just really quick survey in PubMed, and I type in chemicals of emerging contaminants. Sometimes we call those, you know, pharmaceuticals, personal care products, or emerging contaminants, and everything associated with what's going on in the wastewater treatment plants. As you can see, that in the, you know, since 2000, and the publication related to those issues that we, you know, relate to emerging contaminants and wastewater treatment plants has increased dramatically. Now, the summary of all those papers, one take-home message is that there's a wide range of CECs, a long list of CECs. In general, the concentration in the influent that goes into wastewater treatment plants is from parts per trillion to parts per million, depending on the usage, right, the dosage, too. Now, if you look at the animal side, and again, I type in the keywords, antibiotics, veterinary pharmaceuticals or drugs, and animal manure waste, you see that we care about this more, so there are more number of publications than what's dealing with wastewater treatment plants. Again, the take-home message is the same. A wide range of veterinary drugs can be detected in animal manure. A concentration is slightly higher, parts per billion to parts per million range, again, depending on the usage, extent of usage. I really like this publication that was published in the Environmental Science and Technology in 2011. This was an excellent study that conducted in Beijing, China. And I'm originally from Beijing, so this is dear near to my heart. When I saw this, I was like, I can explain this without even reading the paper, just looking at the picture. So in this study, they went into two wastewater treatment plants. And so every month they go in from, this winter and it ends the next winter, every month they go in. They look at the four compounds that are associated with emerging contaminants, and they look at the concentration. So the first one is antibiotic for treating respiratory tract infections. So now I want you to pay attention to the pattern. In the winter, it's high, and then the summer, it's kind of low. So can you explain why we see this pattern? For those of you who have been to Beijing, probably it's no-brainer, right? In the winter, the air pollution is bad, and people tend to, you know, have coughs and sneeze and all that. So we have to take drugs, right, to cure the problem. Now, lipid, again, you see that it's slightly higher in the winter and then lower in the summer. Well, that's naturally human body, the lipid content lipid content in the blood in the winter is slightly higher than the summer, so we need to take medication to lower that. Insect repellent, again, you see a spike in the summer, well, mosquitoes everywhere in the summer. Now, hypertension medication, now we see winter and the dead summer, they peak, but then spring and fall, they drop the concentration. Why is that? Well, those of you being to Beijing, you know, you probably hear that, well, spring is beautiful, fall is great. So the air pollution is the least in the spring and fall. So people are happy, right? So your blood pressure don't go up. So this is a study that's showing that, you know, what goes into the wastewater treatment plant, it can reflect collectively a community's behavior. So now, very quickly, as you can see, it doesn't matter which kind of animal you're looking at, their manure, and you can detect some kind of antibiotics and veterinary drugs and from different countries. Again, this is a global scale. So now, along the path, and there, we can't control this part of usage. We have to use them, and they have to come out of us, and they have to be in the manure and go into the wastewater treatment plants. The next question is, can we rely on the existing technology that is used in the wastewater treatment plants or the manure holding facility that to reduce the problem? Well, again, summary of this thousands of papers is that it depends. So it depends on what kind of compound you're looking at, and the treatment efficiency is a wide range of span. So now first let's look at the comparison between what's going into the wastewater treatment plants, what's coming out. And this is a summary of more than 100 publications, and it was published Water Science Technology. As you can see that you cannot see this names. Those are just names of all kinds of pharmaceuticals and personal care products. And y-axis is the treatment efficiency. So 100% means, oh, there's totally removed from effluent, and now you see there's a wide range from absolutely no removal efficiency to, oh, 100%. That's good news, right, for those chemicals. But now let's look at triclosan as example. And if you look at removal efficiency in terms of comparing what's in effluent, influent, that seems a good news. But then if you look at what's end up in the biosolids, okay, which is a solid portion of wastewater treatment plant product. And so this is a survey by U.S. EPA. They look at, you know, biosolids all over the United States. And I want you to pay attention to this. So triclosan actually did not degrade in the, you know, cannot be degraded in the wastewater treatment plants. What happens is this gets moved from aqueous phase to solid phase and concentrated in the biosolids. So now, summary of all those research, there's minimum CEC degradation. And what we're talking about, either, you know, those compounds either go into effluent or biosolids. So what's the factor that determine the compounds going into effluent or biosolid? So let's look at some challenges that we're facing in the wastewater treatment plants. Now, we are dealing with large volume of wastewater. Regardless which, you know, wastewater treatment you're looking at, they're always in a hurry. Large amount of water going in, they have to go out very fast. Otherwise, the whole place gets you know, flooded. So we're talking about hydraulic retention time about hours to a few days. Very often is hours, and we're talking about 10 to 12 hours time. But if you look at a half-life, this is simple chemistry, right? If you look at a half-life of any of the CEC compounds, I haven't found any with, you know, half-life around hours. So here, just give you some examples. You do not need to know what they are, but if you look at predicted half-life, and it's all on the days, never you can find one in an hour, you know, scale. So now on top of that, you look at, you know, we're looking at a wide range of CECs, and we should expect a wide range of hydrophobicity or hydrophilicity, and here's the log KOW from minus 1.3 to almost 6, okay? Now, if you look at the property, just general property of biosolid, in general has high surface area, high organic carbon content, and also it has very high content of hydrophobic as well as hydrophilic functional group. So that means that it can pick and choose, and hydrophobic, grab onto the hydrophobic CECs, and hydrophilic functional group can grab onto the, you know, hydrophilic CECs. So in that case, basically biosolids can grab onto a wide range of CECs. And here's an example. This is triclosan, high log KOW, but versus tetracycline on the other end of spectrum. But as you can see, they're all fairly concentrated in the biosolids. So now, and the last problem that, another important problem that wastewater treatment plants are facing is that there's really no guidelines. The guidelines, the treatment guidelines or regulations are solely pathogen and heavy metal driven. So when there's no rules, why should we deal with it, right? So that's the biggest problem. Okay, so now they're ineffective, so we have to let them into the environment. The path is going to the soil as land application biosolids and manure application as a soil amendment, and we also reuse the water from both places or direct pump, right, and the effluent from wastewater treatment plants. So CECs goes along with this path into the environment. So now agriculture, we use a lot of CECs in agriculture to maintain the, you know, aquatic, the fish health and stuff, and so that's another source. Now, I want to point out there's another very important source that we have been ignoring in the past many years, and now we start looking at this, which is the aging sewer system and stormwater system, the crossover in urban environment. And here's a study we did in the town of Blacksburg, where I'm from, you know, at University of Virginia Tech. So in this case, we look at our local stormwater system throughout the town. So this is Virginia, so this is Virginia Tech. So, you know, the water goes through the town. And we look at two things. One was 4-nanophenol, which is associated with CECs, and the other is a bacteria indicator, which is solely pointed to the human impact. This is HF183. And as you can see, that we see a very good correlation between the HF183, which indicates sewer contamination, and also 4-nanophenol, and which also indicates the human source. And again, along this water path, there's no wastewater treatment effluent, so there's no impact from that. This is total urban environment, so there's no manure application, agricultural production. So now, activities like this might be able to, you know, can contribute CEC, certain amount of CECs into, you know, the stormwater system. However, the fact that we detect large amount of human associated bacteroids, and that is very nicely correlated with CECs, indicates that the sewer system, there's leakage. And as you know, that very, in the United States, a lot of urban area, just for the sake of easiness, they bury the stormwater drainage channel right next to the sewer pipe. So when the sewer system is leaking and there's aging problem, and it get leaked right into the stormwater, which is untreated. Okay. And so in addition to 4-nanophenol, we also detected, you know, other emerging contaminants. And in this pond that received the stormwater runoff from the town of Blacksburg. And we also saw that if this pond is totally useless for degrading the CECs, and so the CECs can make its way downstream to eventually to the river receiving water. And so there's a recent study published by USGS further confirm our suspicion that sewer system is one major source that has been quietly ignored. Now, just some statistics in terms of the global perspective in terms of occurrence of CEC. Let me use aquatic system as example. We all saw this study, you know, that was published 2002. This is a landmark study by USGS that really raised our concern about emerging contaminants. Now, later last year, so 10 years later, or 15 years later, and this group published this paper, and they look at, you know, a lot of publications, and then they put all the database data together, and they reported that, you know, hundreds of CECs can be detected in everywhere you look at when there's human, right? And it's in the, they're detectable in the surface water, groundwater, tap water, and drinking water. So it's everywhere, truly global perspective. Now, occurrence, and we know the source and occurrence. It's widespread in the environment. And what's the concern? Well, for longest time, what we concern about is aquatic health. So you hear report about the feminization of fish and frog and many other things. So now recently, we start paying attention to the ecosystem services, basically the land that receive biosolids, manure, and water that contains CECs. How does it affect soil processes and functions? So this is more emergent questions along this line. Now, from the soil, water, crop, and to human, And we also worry about one thing, well, a couple of things. So I will mention that, talk about that. So as a summary, concerns and impacts, we're looking at two, you know, big categories, ecological health and human health. Under ecological health, I mentioned the soil processes and functions, and we're asking those questions regarding nutrient cycling, carbon sequestration, so on and so forth. Aquatic organisms still a problem. We're still studying that. And plant uptake and bioaccumulation, and that can be related to the potential impact on the human health. We don't know much about it, and so there are studies out there, and hopefully we have more information. Now, under human health, two biggest concerns. One is antibiotic-resistant development, and the other is the endocrine disruptor, disruption function of a lot of CECs that we're facing. So now, this is my last slide. What kind of challenges? So we know the occurrence, we know they're wide everywhere, and the challenges we're facing are these two mentalities, okay? One is that, oh my goodness, you know, it's just nonsense, their concentration is so low, it's just a bunch of hype. But plenty of research have shown that wastewater treatment plants as well as animal holding facilities and they are not effective in degrading CECs of chemical of emerging concern, and they are widespread in the environment, granted the concentration is low. And we have observed biological impacts here and there. So they're not a bunch of hypes, okay? So now, is the skies falling? Well, it is not. And we are developing new water treatment technologies in the hope that in the future, the technology is good enough to remove a wide range of CECs rather than one or onesies or twosies. And, there's a lot of work need to be done. That's one of our challenge. And then manure and biosolids, how do we apply them on land so that we can reduce the runoff of emerging contaminants associated with those materials? And one of my graduate students is going to give a talk tomorrow on the manure application method, how that impact the runoff of CECs to the environment. Okay, now, improving aging infrastructure, that's another big challenge. That requires a lot of investment. I don't know, we have that money right now. So in this front, sky is falling a little bit. Risk assessment, we know that research have shown that there are, you know, indication of biological impacts, but it's by no means it's comprehensive. So to have better regulation, we need better risk assessment. And using triclosan as example, we use toothpaste with triclosan as, you know, at 3,000 parts per million range. And just the other day, my dentist was trying to give me a tube of toothpaste, and I look at it, I gave it back to him because it has 0.3% triclosan in it. So I said, no, please don't distribute anymore. Now, from toothpaste to biosolid, the concentration goes down and then goes into the soil, goes further down, and goes into the water. So, and then the concentration is even lower. So now, where do we regulate in this chain of pathway? And so that's another challenge. So throughout the years, we have supported through USDA NEPA, and to look at the emerging contaminants from the wastewater treatment perspective, biosolid perspective, and manure application perspective. So we're really grateful that USDA has been supported us throughout the years, and we appreciate the support from Virginia Tech and also the countless graduate students that work in the lab, and I don't have enough room to list their name, but I just want to thank them all. So with that, thank you, and questions. Do we have time? Thank you.